Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world, even though there are toxic chemicals all around us in the consumer products we use, in the air and soil and water, in the environment. It seems like sometimes that there's toxic chemicals everywhere, and there are, but there are also many products and places that don't have toxic chemicals, and there are also many ways that we can remove toxic chemicals from our own homes, from our own bodies, and have a relatively toxic-free life. In fact, toxic-free enough to make a huge difference in our health, our happiness, our well-being, our productivity, and having the things that we want in life. Today is Tuesday, July 23rd, 2013, and I'm here in Clearwater, Florida. And if I sound a little different today, it's because I'm having technical problems with my computer, and so I'm calling in this show on the regular telephone instead of on my high-tech state-of-the-art audio equipment, which will get fixed fairly soon. And today we're going to be talking about what happens when toxic chemicals are not regulated, as many of them aren't, and people like you and me get exposed to them and how they affect our health and what we could do about them so that at the regulatory level things get changed. But first I want to just tell you about what's happening in my life this week. Oh my God. A lot of chaos is occurring. Lest you think everything is always smooth with me. But, you know, it's typical when you decide that you're going to make a big change, as I'm going through making some big personal changes in my life, what happens is that there's all this confusion and there's all this stuff going on, and actually it's all moving in the right direction, but it looks pretty chaotic, and sometimes things don't work properly, like my computer, or people don't show up or whatever, and you go, oh my God, is this ever going to be over? And I know that I'm moving towards a better place in my life and that things are going to be more organized and I'm going to get more work done and all the things that I want to do. And it's just a little crazy right now. It's that way with toxic chemicals too, because for a long time everything seemed very peaceful when we were just sitting there not knowing what was going on with toxic chemicals and just having, as the commercials used to say when I was a kid, better living through chemistry. That as long as we didn't know anything, it all seemed rather peaceful about toxic chemicals while we were just going through our lives being poisoned. And then we started finding out that there was toxic chemicals. And now, you know, there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of people protesting and we're thinking about what to do differently. And some people think we should do this. Other people think we should do that. And things need to change. There needs to be a change. And so things can seem kind of crazy, but just like I'm going to get through what's going on in my life and come out the other end, so are we as a nation, as a world. We're all going to come through this toxic chemical thing, and there is going to be a world at the other end of it where we get to have a wonderful toxic-free world to live in, because there's so many of us that are creating it day by day. So my guest today is Peggy Cahill, who became ill after being exposed to some chemicals that were off-gassing from ordinary spray foam insulation. Now, many, many, many people have this very same spray foam insulation in their homes. And she's going to tell us how it affected her health and what she's doing to educate people and create awareness and advocate at the state and local level so that there can be regulations that protect people from this kind of thing. And just as a coincidence, really, this week I received an email from somebody questioned for my Green Living Q&A blog, and she said, we insulated our attic with spray foam insulation last year, and she gave me the brand name, and it says, well, it doesn't have a fishy smell that I've read about on the internet. It has an odor, a sort of a sweet smell. We only smell it if we go in the attic when we come home after a few days of the house being locked up and warm. I want to have an air quality test done. Any suggestions on what to have tested? Now, this is interesting because I think that there are probably many, many, many more people who are being affected by the chemicals that are off-gassing from spray foam insulation and don't even know it. We're going to talk about those kinds of things today. Hi, Peggy. Thanks for being with me on Toxic Free Talk Radio.
Hi, Deborah. How are you? It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you. So tell us what happened with you. You had some spray foam insulation, and then something happened.
Back in 2010, I moved into a small cottage in Massachusetts where I lived that had been recently renovated, completely renovated, including winterization from the exterior walls, and spray foam insulation was in the walls. It was a 1940s cottage that hadn't been inhabited in a long time, so I was the first occupant. I moved in and lived in that space for 7 months. Within about a month or two of moving in, I began having various kinds of symptoms that were unusual. I had always been healthy before moving into the cottage. I had acid reflux and some episodes of even chest tightness, short of breathness. I went to the ER a few times. They couldn't determine anything, and I went back into the cottage and continued to live there. I started having some food reactions that I'd never had before, first to wheat, gluten, and then dairy. As my immune system appeared to be now, later I understand, reacting to the chemicals I was breathing in. Eventually I started having sort of broader systemic inflammation, soreness in my hips and rib cage and pelvis. So I was in and out of the doctor's office and then being referred to a variety of specialists for these array of symptoms, which really no answers were found. And it was very mystifying. And no one was considering an environmental source, including myself, actually, that could be at the root of the problem. 5 months into the cottage stay, I developed left upper quadrant pain, and was eventually discovered that I now had inflammation of my pancreas, also known as pancreatitis.
Mm-hmm.
And for unknown reasons, and I had always been healthy and had a healthy lifestyle. Eventually, I spent the entire winter in this enclosed building with no screens or windows or ventilation systems in this cottage. But by the spring, which was a total of 7 months now in the cottage, a rainy day came followed by heat, where apparently the walls of the cottage exterior were saturated and then got hot. So there was a noxious smell in the cottage for the first time. Several people came into the cottage and noticed it and said something's very wrong here. And I realized then that I vacated immediately, and then it became clear to me that there was an environmental trigger to what was happening with my health. When I moved out, I got pulmonary function tests, and they determined I had reactive airways, which is a form of asthma, and the pulmonologist referred to it as isocyanate asthma, of which he had seen a number of cases, isocyanates being one of the noxious ingredients in the material of the spray foam insulation.
Yeah.
So during my cottage stay, I had 3 ER visits, 20 doctor visits, chest x-rays, EKGs, CT scans, blood tests, and there was no real answers until eventually the pancreatitis, and then when I moved out, after pursuing physicians that might have more knowledge, I got more answers, including the reactive airways in my lungs. So that is how that unfolded.
Yes, that's. But unfortunately, your story is typical of many people who are exposed to toxic chemicals and don't know that it's toxic chemicals, and then continue to be exposed to them day in and day out for a period of months until somebody figures out that, oh, this is something. And I've actually never heard the phrase isocyanate asthma, so it was interesting to me that you went to a doctor that identified it as such, and I'm very happy to hear that they're putting isocyanate exposure together with asthma. Just after the break that's coming up right now, we're going to talk about isocyanates and about polyurethane that is what is used to make spray foam insulation, and so that you can understand what the chemistry is and what else, other ways that you can be exposed to it in addition to spray foam insulation. I'm talking with my guest, Peggy Cahill, I'm Deborah Lindad, and you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and I'm here today with my guest, Peggy Cahill, and we're talking about unregulated toxic chemicals that make people sick, unknowing that they're even being exposed to them. I want to just, before Peggy and I start to chat again, I want to just read some portions to you. The person who wrote to me that I read their email earlier about the polyurethane foam insulation that was making them sick, she sent me a link to the product description sheet. And the first thing to know, I'm not going to give the brand name here, but the first thing to know is that it has the word natural in it. It's got a leaf on it right at the top. The first two things that you see is the word natural, and then there's a leaf. And then down at the bottom it says superior green building performance. Now, those are the first things, three things that you see. And it legitimately is a green thing because it's there to save energy. But green often, like particularly in this case, has nothing to do with being non-toxic. It has to do with other totally legitimate environmental benefits. Okay, so it says then it describes the product. It's part two of a two-component polyurethane foam insulation system, and that it needs to be applied. Wait, I need to find this place. It has to be applied by a certified applier, and that they have to wear approved chemical protection equipment. OSHA approved respirators are required. They have to be trained. If you inhale this when it's being applied, you have to remove to fresh air and seek medical attention. And that there's more details on the material safety data sheet. Now, and if liquid is swallowed, seek medical attention immediately. Now, I know that there are some, and this is an important point, there are some materials, like paint, for example, which is more toxic when you're applying it, and then when it dries or cures, then it's supposed to be less toxic. But in this particular case, with this spray polyurethane foam insulation, a lot of times there are cases where it doesn't quite cure. It's like it's kind of like epoxy glue. It comes in two parts, and you have to mix it, and then it makes a glue. What polyurethane foam is a combination of isocyanates plus polyols. And polyols are like the plastic part, and then the isocyanates. I forget my chemistry here. Peggy, do you want to tell us more about isocyanates?
What I've learned is that the spray foam insulation contains isocyanates, also referred to as disocyanates. Either they're the same thing. Ammonia byproducts, flame retardants, and a reputable Boston physician told me also there's two proprietary chemicals that are not disclosed by the companies because they have a patent, but that those are very noxious, she said, big bad chemicals that they don't even know what they are, this reputable Boston person.
Yeah.
So it's a mixture of a mixture of things. It's timely that this person has emailed you, and I'm really, really glad to hear that. That, you know, I hope my conversation with you can be of use to this person in some way, because this physician told me, and I learned from many physicians, that the material is often not mixed properly, doesn't cure properly, and is leaking and bubbling in the wall. So that's one scenario.
That's exactly it. It's not like in this particular case for this particular product, it's not like you put it on the wall and it just dries like paint.
Right.
There's
right.
so much room for error because
there's a lot of room for error. And
right. If you're not trained right, if the applier is on drugs or drunk, or didn't study it well,
or otherwise
trained,
not well,
or,
right?
You know, or just not paying attention, or he's having a fight with his wife, or whatever. You're gonna, you could easily end up with a chemical mixture in your walls that is not going to cure.
There's a great room for error. There's no oversight. There's no one monitoring. This the cottage was granted an occupancy permit. The material was never checked because I learned that the building codes in Massachusetts were old and outdated and didn't have any real clear parameters about the checking of the material. And just to mention, I was also told by a different physician, a very fantastic Harvard-educated physician at an occupational health clinic, that even if the material works perfectly and it is cured, it still creates stale, stagnant air that can pose a health risk without adequate air exchanges and air flow through the space. So you absolutely are supposed to have mechanical ventilation and or a system where there's adequate airflow. Buildings are being made too tight, and it's creating this poor air, and people don't realize it. So it's very worrisome for that fact as well.
I just want to say a little more about this, because it used to be prior to like about the 70s, I started becoming interested in the subject because of my own illness at about the same time that houses and all buildings were being tightened for energy efficiency. I remember when I was 16 and I got a car, I got a Firebird Formula 400 with this huge 400 cubic inch engine, and I could outrace Corvettes in this car. And I'm showing my racy side here. But it's like all I wanted when I was 16 was a fast car.
Right.
And I got one. My father gave me one for my birthday and taught me how to drive it. And but I had to sell my car a couple of years later because I couldn't get 100 octane gas anymore. And I remember that was the time when the energy crisis started because I couldn't get gas for my car. And then that's when they started tightening the buildings. And that's when we started having indoor air quality problems. And prior to that, I want to make sure people who are listening understand, prior to that, the houses and buildings were built what's referred to as leaky because there was air coming in the cracks. They were not filled up with caulk and all of those things. And so there was actually ventilation going on, even if all the doors and windows were closed. We need to take a break, but we'll be back with Peggy Cahill, and we'll be talking more about isocyanates, polyurethane foam insulation, and regulations. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. And we're here today with Peggy Cahill. We're talking about how she was affected by being exposed to ordinary polyurethane toxic foam insulation. Jeez. I can talk today. I can talk. Peggy, I want to go back to this email that I received from my reader. She asked that she wanted to have an air quality test done, and what should she have tested? Now, I want everyone to know that if you want to get an air test, you do need to have some idea of what to test for. Otherwise, you could be testing for thousands and thousands of chemicals and not get the one that's actually causing a problem. So if you think you're having a problem with a particular thing, like this woman is asking about her polyurethane spray foam insulation, find out what the chemicals might be and have them test for that. So what do you think she should test for?
Well, this is a little tricky because when I first moved out of the cottage, I made a lot of phone calls, including to the State Department of Public Health, and asked about air testing. And I was told that the science wasn't there yet, that there was no way to test the human body from the metabolites or to test the air, and that the product is on the market without adequate information available about the health effects. Later, I was told by an occupational health clinic physician that there is a way to test the material by going in, having one of only two reputable testers that she mentioned. She said there's a lot of people out there that don't really know how to test well, but one of two would go in and drill into the wall and see if the material is actually leaking and bubbling. That is what she said is the best way to test. Other than that,
tell you what the chemicals are.
No, it doesn't.
I suppose testing for leaking and bubbling, you would then know that it's not fully cured and that chemicals of some sort or another are being released. Like if you wanted to sue somebody, that would be the way to prove that, right?
That would be one way to establish the clear, you know, clear evidence of your, you know, what the problems causing a health risk. The materials, I'm sorry, are causing a health risk.
Yeah.
But I can't adequately speak to where the other what other testing, because I've been told there really isn't clear cut testing for the materials.
Thank you for your experience, that's very valuable to even know that.
Right.
So I just want to mention.
I don't want to fail to mention this. I spoke to, I called a company that produces spray foam insulation after I moved out, and said I was a homeowner wondering what I had to consider using the materials in a small space, because it was all throughout the cottage, around the walls and in the roof line, et cetera. And a chief building technologist at the company said to me, in quote, using the material all over the house is like putting a plastic bag over the house. He said, for health, you need to have fresh air and air exchanges, and you need to have mechanical ventilation to keep the air clean, or it will pose a health risk to the occupant, end quote.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. They need to put that on the label of the product.
I know, and I agree with you about green. It's completely misleading because they say it's conservationist, but as you said, when workers are covered from head to toe with masks and things to protect themselves, that's a clear-cut indication that the material is quite toxic. There is evidence, there is some studies, some well-established facts, just to mention. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has a study out. The isocyanates are irritating to the GI tract, respiratory tract, and mucous membranes, that it sensitizes workers who've had severe asthma attacks. There's a guide to chemical hazards that they've created indicating spray foam insulation, which contains this methyl bisophenol isocyanate, causes adverse health effects to the respiratory system. There's the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, a study showing increased lung cancer risk among female workers in the polyurethane foam manufacturing industry. The EPA issued a call to action in April 2011, the Environmental Protection Agency, citing potential health effects that might result from exposures to isocyanates. I called the EPA after reading that. They said they had gotten a lot of calls after issuing that. I said, what can be done? And they said, you can file a report on the Consumer Product Safety Commission, of which I did. I would recommend anyone listening that they consider doing that. You can document what's happened, and if they get enough published accounts of stories and adverse health effects from the product, they will take action. So there are public reports there. It's, you go to that website, Consumer Product Safety Commission, and you put it under report an unsafe product, and you write down what's happened or urge others to do that. The EPA itself, you can make a report. It's a public report, but I'm not sure about the efficacy of that because they're really not taking action at this point. So
but
there are
even,
but studies.
Even if they aren't taking action, they are collecting the information. And at some point, it's worth having your information on file.
Right.
Because they'll say,
absolutely.
Oh, we're
this
ready
is an advocacy
to act on
step.
This now. Or here's even better, that if they start getting hundreds of thousands of reports, that
right.
is what makes them get their attention.
Right. Exactly. Everyone has to become empowered to write, to document what's happened. You know,
yes.
I wrote a letter to both town and state stating what happened. So I met with the town that I lived in and the building inspector, the town administrator, a selectman, and articulated the problem and asked how it became occupancy permitted, this property, and learned that there was old codes and asked them to write a letter to the state, which they did, to say, change the codes. You've got to be concerned that one of our citizens became ill from this material. Then I went and followed up on that letter to the state and testified to the Department of Public Safety in Massachusetts about exactly what had happened and all the research I had learned, urging them to be aware and to take steps to provide better education and protections for consumers, for residents of the state. So those are concrete steps, you know, writing down what's happened, documenting it, and creating, we can create a body of evidence.
Yes.
And
yes.
that's what we have to do, right?
That is exactly what we have to do. Because, you know, I had to learn a lot about how chemicals got evaluated for being toxic. And when I started asking questions about consumer products that have toxic chemicals in them. And, you know, what gets respected is when there's a scientific study. And that years and years ago, when I started hearing about myself and other people going to doctors and saying, well, I was exposed to this, and this is what my health situation is. And for many people, doctors and scientists and regulators, they say, well, if there's not a study where, you know, official scientific people did the study, then
right.
this problem doesn't exist.
Right.
But it is. I mean, it's called anecdotal evidence. They discredit anecdotal evidence as if it didn't happen. But if you get 100,000, 500,000 people all writing the same letter that says,
right.
I was exposed to X chemical and Y symptom happened, then that's how studies can then be done. Or doctors and scientists can listen and say, wait a minute, there was 500,000 people who used this product and had a problem. And
right.
so it isn't insignificant. I mean, I started, oh, we have to take a break, but I'll finish my sentence after the break. I'm Deborah
Great.
Lindad. We're talking with Peggy Cahill about regulations and toxic chemicals and polyurethane foam. And you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Peggy Cahill. We're talking about toxic chemicals and regulations and polyurethane foam. I just want to finish what I was about to say before the break about anecdotal evidence, and that is that when I first started writing about toxic chemicals and consumer products, it was very clear to me that there were toxic chemicals in wall-to-wall carpets, synthetic wall-to-wall carpets. And the reason it was clear to me and that I wrote about it is because practically everybody I met said, these carpets are making me sick. And nobody, there were no studies, and nobody was talking about those, and I was the only one writing about it. And until, I forget the year, but the EPA installed in their building some synthetic carpet, and everybody got sick. And suddenly the EPA had a whole bunch of people having anecdotal evidence, and they started testing carpet samples, and they found that there were hundreds of toxic chemicals in them.
Yeah.
And that's the value of anecdotal evidence.
Yep.
And the other
yep.
thing I want to make sure that I say is that polyurethane foam that we've just been talking about for the past almost an hour is the same polyurethane foam in this insulation. It's the same polyurethane foam as in your polyurethane foam mattress. And the difference, it's the same, those mattresses are made from polyolefin isocyanates. And the difference between them, and this is the only difference that I could find, is that when you spray it into the wall as a foam, you are on the spot taking the isocyanates and the polyols and mixing them there. And when they make the foam that mattresses are made out of, they mix them in the factory, and then they actually are baked, like baking a cake.
I didn't realize that.
And so it cures it. And so when you search for information about the toxicity of polyurethane foam, you get piles and piles and piles of reports about the toxicity of polyurethane foam spray insulation. But very little about polyurethane foam used in a mattress or anything else made, you know, seat cushions or whatever. It, in those cases, the thing that is even more toxic is the fire retardant. And I'm imagining that there must be fire retardants in polyurethane spray foam as
there
well
is.
Because it's
yep.
extremely flammable. The
right.
polyurethane foam is referred to as solid gasoline. It's so flammable. So
yeah,
it's
there
just,
definitely are flame retardants and ammonia byproducts.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, this is just not a good substance to be putting in your walls. Just not at all.
It's not a substance. It's not a safe substance for children, for anyone, for adults, for elderly. It's really unfortunate. But I commend you on the work you're doing to bring information to the public, you know, to
Thank you.
To just person to person get the news out and help people become more aware. because it's really essential. A lot of, you know, this for me, it's been a very lonely journey trying to find information out, dealing with sensitization and dysautonomia, autonomic nervous system dysfunction as a result of this exposure, trying to learn about that, find physicians who support and help you, which you can find. But, you know, it's really important to find some way to educate and advocate in whatever way you can. You know, whatever pathway the person feels comfortable in, to just find something to become empowered somehow, to take a step, even a single step, even if it's, you know, talking to friends and loved ones, you know, making sure they know.
I completely agree with you, because the thing that got me through when I became chemically injured so many years ago, the thing that got me through it was, number one, just a huge desire to be well and not be a victim of it. But also, secondarily, I wanted to tell other people. It was a puzzle for me. It was a mystery that I wanted to solve. And it's like, how come these consumer products that are being sold, I thought the government was regulating these things, and it turns out that they aren't. And so how could there be toxic chemicals in them? What are those toxic chemicals? And it was the burning desire to find out what were the toxic chemicals in the products so that I could avoid them, so that I could find the safe products. They got me out of bed every morning instead of just lying there being sick.
To get you to wellness, you had to go to
get, it's
discover.
What got me to wellness, yeah.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
And I used to drive fast cars, and I was a professional musician. And that's what my life was like prior to being injured from my toxic chemical exposures. And I completely gave all that up and just said,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is the most important thing, that how can anyone else function in life if you've been poisoned?
Well,
and
exactly.
I knew that I could get well.
Right, and we want to prevent this from happening to others. So
that's exactly right. That was exactly when I got it, when I understood that I didn't have to go through all that misery of having been poisoned.
Right.
I went, oh, my God, I need to tell people because I know this, because I know that this is true from the bottom of my soul. And I can see that that's your point as well. That, you know, there's, for me, I can see, and I've seen this in other people, that there's this kind of anger, like, why didn't somebody tell me this?
Right, right. Yes, there absolutely is justifiable anger and frustration, which you have to give yourself permission to feel that, too.
Yeah.
And then
use
it as a catalyst in some way, in some way to take a step in some direction, some kind of action. Like we talked about, write a letter, you know, tell your friends, write to, you know, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, call the EPA, make a phone call, you know, bring the attention and the awareness to people, because there is a lack of awareness. And the I mentioned to you the On Point piece by Tom Ashbrook, is a wonderful onpointwbur.org. He did a recent piece on toxic chemicals in this country, and that's really worthy of listening to, and recommending others listen to, as just a general framework of understanding what's really happening.
I
so
agree.
Getting informed, and then determining some way to try to make the situation better. Otherwise,
I think it's important to talk about how people are getting sick, but also what the safe alternatives are. And that especially right now, the whole issue of regulation and disclosure is on the table for the United States of America and manufacturers, because we have enough people now who are interested and saying, we need to know, we have the right as consumers to know what is in the products so that we can make decisions. But I think that manufacturers know that if they were to actually put all the toxic chemicals on the label that are in the products, that nobody would buy them. And so there has to be a transition into safer products, but at the same time there needs to be a transition into disclosure and actually saying, this is what is in the product. That you mentioned before, that there were, a doctor told you that there are chemicals in the spray foam that nobody can find out what they are. And I started hearing that 30 years ago from poison control centers. Even the poison control center is not told what these trade secret chemical ingredients are. And that is by allowing those trade secrets, then we don't get to find out what are the toxic chemicals that are harming our health. And that's a regulatory thing. There should be regulations, I believe, this is my opinion. I think that the labeling regulations should be across the board, the same for all products, and it should list every single ingredient. It doesn't have to list it in the amount, and anybody who's ever cooked anything knows that amount is critical if you want to duplicate something. So I think that you could tell, you know, everybody in the world that to bake a cake, you need to put in sugar and eggs and flour, but if you don't tell them how much, they'll never be able to make a cake. So this whole thing about trade secrets, I think, is ridiculous.
I agree with you. Transparency is really important. Disclosure of ingredients, transparency, people getting educated, like through an environmental working group, going to their databases of products they've studied and learning what's in the products for yourself, what you're using, and what is better alternatives, safer alternatives.
But I think what would be even better would be to live in a world where we didn't have to do that.
Well, let's support that, yes.
And I think that that's where regulation really comes in.
Mm.
That if regulation, like I know for myself, I mean, there are different people in the world and they have different viewpoints, but I know for myself that I have like a personal ethic of wanting to do the right thing. And for me, the right thing is doing something that supports life. And if I am given a choice between doing something that creates life to be better or something that harms life, I'm going to choose the thing that creates life to be better.
And
a life-affirming thing. And I think that each of us have that within us and that we just need to have, if the manufacturers would just say, we're going to choose the life-affirming thing, there would not be no need for regulation. But since they're not doing that, then as a nation, we should be stepping in and saying, please do the life-affirming thing, and if not, we'll fine you. And that way, everybody gets to be safe.
Let's have a campaign, the life-affirming campaign.
Yes.
And we'll get you a solar-powered fast car, because you like fast cars, but it will be solar-powered, and you will wear like a hat that says, Deborah, toxic-free world, or whatever, right?
Right. Thank you so much for being with me today, Peggy. We're out of time.
Thank you. Okay, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio. Find out more at toxicfreetalkradio.com.